You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Did you own the MC Hammer parachute pants when you were a young man?
If you don't believe me, I don't really care. I don't need a picture for it. I like the memory.
Giles Barnes has parachute pants, though. I think they're just catching on in Europe. Two-year-old thing.
So it's like reverse buyer's remorse.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean,
this is 11th dimension chess right here.
Yeah,
maybe.
Cheated
I'm
a little bit, yep.
That's good radio right there, guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on Sirius XMFC, Channel 85, and MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe. With me, not as always, a little bit of difference here. We've got Ben the Research Bear up in the building. No bear call this time, Ben. It's because you're with us this whole time. And, of course, out in the octagon, Matt the Armchair Analyst Doyle. Boys, how we doing? Another MLS weekend in the books.
What did you guys do with Gasman? What happened to the young man? I want our listeners to know. I was just informed like 15 minutes ago. Oh yeah, Gasman's not here.
He's not here. I mean, I'm looking on the floor in here, and I'm not seeing him. So I mean, I'm not sure where he would
he's
be.
He's gallivanting somewhere. I mean, the guy calls the first ever video replay game in the history of soccer.
And he goes big time.
And he goes big time on us.
He
yeah,
goes
exactly.
Just gallivanting is something that I wasn't sure that Dave could do. But I'm going to take your word for it, Ben.
So is he testing himself at a higher level in Europe now?
He might be. He might be. You know what? I think we might hear from him in the mailbag. I've arranged a call with him. I talked to his agent, who talked to my people, who got to his assistant, and perhaps he has some time to chit-chat with us about that video replay stuff that went down in Red Bulls 2 the other day. We will definitely try to talk to him. We'll see if his schedule allows. We will definitely talk all about the weekend. It was a big weekend that you should definitely be looking back on with a little bit of fondness for a variety of reasons. And I'm going to do something a little bit strange this week. We don't normally do this. We don't normally break it into Eastern and Western Conference segments here, but we're going to do that because I just think it makes the most sense this week. In the first segment, it's Western Conference, and we'll talk all about that one. And we'll kind of lead it with, you guessed it, Nicholas Ladero. So be ready for that. The segment two is the Eastern Conference, and that's going to be led by the Red Bulls, who all of a sudden are roaring up the table, just 2 points back of New York City FC. Toronto FC right there as well. Philadelphia Union, big result this weekend. DC United, a nice win. The big question here, Ben, is who's the best team in the East? And I'm not quite sure who it is. So we're going to tackle that in the second segment. And then in the third segment, Dave, as I said, may or may not make I can't even get it out. That's how improbable it is. He may or may not make time for us to talk about that game, and we'll see what he's up to. So stick around for that as well. Before we jump into the results, it's goalkeeper week here at MLSsoccer.com. You can go vote for the best goalkeeper in MLS history. And right now there's some travesties going down on the bracket. That's because people have forgotten MLS history and they don't remember how good guys like Pat Onstad were, or Tony Miola, perhaps, or Kevin Hartman. I mean, guys trailing that should not be trailing. There's 16 goalkeepers in this, all very, very talented, all very decorated in MLS. But go check it out. Go vote for it at MLSsoccer.com. It's front and center. You won't be able to miss it. Who should win this thing for you, Doyle? Who should emerge on top? I don't want people to vote along Doyle's lines, but I would like them to vote better than they're voting right now.
There's only one answer. It's Nick Raimondo. And it remains one of the biggest travesties in league history that he's never won goalkeeper of the year. Maybe this is the year that he gets it, but just in terms of how good he's been for how long, and the fact that he's going to end up owning every single record in the book and will probably hold on to all of them for a long, long time. This is pretty easy. It's figuring out 2 through 5 or 2 through 6. That's a little tougher. By my reckoning,
it is. You can go check out Ben Bear's research piece on the site, basically laying out for you all the records that Raimondo owns and the ones he's still chasing as well. Go check that out. We've also got some nice roundtables hosted by Landon Donovan with Casey Keller, who Joe Cannon and Kevin Hartman.
And Kevin Hartman, yeah. And in the first one that we put out today, they mentioned about 12 goalkeepers who are the best, who could be considered the best in MLS right now. None of them mentioned Bill Hamid.
Yeah, this
I feel like it's a personal shot at me.
Yeah, he's pretty he's like Bill Hamid's secondary agent slash hype man.
I mean, I'm trying to be. Yeah,
I know. He's a big Bill Hamid guy, so he's a little disappointed right now in the way he's being treated in that bracket. But we'll see who comes out on top. The round of 16 is on Monday. On Tuesday, we go into the second round, then the semifinals, and then the final on Thursday. We'll announce that bad boy on Friday. You can follow Goalkeeper Week coverage at MLSsoccer.com throughout the week. Some really good stuff there, some really good conversations. Let's jump into the weekend. Seattle is what we'll start with. They took out the field on Sunday evening. A 2-1 win for them against RSL. They're now rolling. They're now, what, let's see, 5 points out of the final playoff spot, and they play the Portland Timbers this weekend. That's shaping up to be a massive game. We'll talk about that, of course. But Nicolas Lodeiro gets his first goal in MLS, Doyle. He gets another assist, the game-winning assist to Jordan Morris at the near post. Nice little header for him. And Morris also had three or four other chances that I think he was kicking himself about. But Nicolas Lodeiro is for real. Ben came on this show last time and said 0% chance, 0% that the Sounders make the playoffs. You yourself have a 0% prediction related to NYCFC. So I'm thinking that we're doing a lot of swinging and missing on 0% claims here. Is this what turns them into a playoff team? Could this be a playoff team?
You know, I said all year long that I liked what Seattle was doing in terms of building possession, and they just – we're lacking that one guy, that central brain, who could turn that possession into the types of, you know, penetrative runs or passes that teams thrive with. And Lodeiro just stepped right into that lineup, and he solved pretty much every problem that they've had. I knew Lodeiro was great. I've seen him a bunch with Boca, with Uruguay, with a little bit with Ajax back in the day. I knew he would be a great player. I didn't think he would fit this seamlessly and this quickly. I mean, other than Jermaine Jones, well, I guess Drogba last year as well, those are the two that come to mind.
Higuain went 11 goals, 5 assists in 13 games, I think. They didn't quite make the playoffs, the crew didn't that year, but
right.
he was pretty
That's
incredible.
That's another good one, yeah. But even Robbie Keane didn't do this. And look, I think the Sounders have a real shot, but this coming week is their season. It's Sunday versus Portland, Wednesday at Houston, and then the following Sunday at Portland. If they take 7 points out of that, then they are right there in the mix. If they take anything, if they allow the Timbers to win either of those two games, I think even with Lodeiro in the team, it's probably a bridge too far.
Yeah, Sunday night, 9:30 p.m. Eastern, FS1 here in the States, MLS Live in Canada. It is a Cascadia Cup Classic, I think. There's no other way to put it. There's so much at stake for these teams. The Portland Timbers will want to be the team that steps on Seattle's throat. Seattle, of course, are just trying anyway to claw their way back into the mix. A big game. I think 60,000 people expected to be there for this one.
Not surprising.
Not surprising at all. And they're going to see, Ben, I think, a Clint Dempsey who's had his fire lit by Nicolas Lodeiro coming in. We heard all the talk from him, oh, we're missing that attacker. We're missing that guy that opens things up. We're missing another magic man. And they have it. And that's great. And Clint Dempsey's going to get chances, and he's going to feast on Nicolas Lodeiro and his service. And he's getting, you know, assists from Jordan Morris, and things are working out for him. But I actually think that Clint the competitor, Clint the one who wants to be A1, Clint the guy who wants to be the alpha dog, is going to be brought out by Nicolas Lodeiro. Because he's going to see a challenge here. He's going to see a challenge that he still needs to be number one on the hierarchy here. And I think we're about to see a monster end of the year from Clint. Same for Jordan Morris. And I think the same for Nicolas Lodeiro. I mean, this is the sort of move that greases all the different parts within the machine and all of a sudden gets the machine rolling.
Can I just build on that just a little bit?
Yeah, go for it.
Because I think we saw that last week more than this past week with Christian Roldan. Who has been a really good young player in a year and a half, but maybe not a game breaker. And then against Orlando City, he made a couple of plays just because he had more time and space, because Lodeiro takes guys away from him. But the one who really benefits is Jovin Jones, because on the right day, and by the way, Sunday was the right day, Jovin Jones is just a force on the overlap. The problem was earlier in the year, he would overlap and the ball would never get to him, and he'd sort of like just stand around and do nothing and then get burned going the other direction. Well, Lodeiro could basically turn Jones into an all-star. He has made everybody on the Sounders better at this point. This is how you spend a DP slot, folks.
Getting nervous?
Fair,
all this talk?
To be fair, I'm not backing off my prediction at all. But to be fair, I mean, I made that prediction before we knew Lodeiro was going to do this.
Oh, I don't know. He's already walking it back.
I'm not walking it back at all. They're not making the playoffs.
Okay.
What I will say is, when you're talking about Dempsey, what I noticed on Sunday is that, like, he seemed to have, like, he he had a lot of flair, mm-hmm. which is what Dempsey's kind of known for, but you really weren't seeing him, like, getting excited and having showing the back heels and all that, the stuff that he would show with Obafemi in the beginning part of the season. Maybe in the first few games, but, like, before Copa America and since he's been back, before Ladera got there, it was like, just was kind of like, it was kind of going through the motions a little bit.
A subdued Clint Dempsey.
Yeah, kind of going through the motions, yeah. like, wasn't getting hyped, wasn't getting excited, and now that Lodero is, he sees what the kind of player Lodero is and what he can do for him, he's kind of getting that excitement back in his game.
He is definitely having that fire lit. He didn't get a goal in this one. Jordan Morris got that one. Jordan Morris also had a run in this game in which he basically left the entire RSL defense behind and then rolled the ball 2 feet wide to the right post. That's just kind of how it goes this year for Jordan Morris. It's feast or famine. I still think he's got a good chance to get in the middle teens in goals. And let's be honest, that's basically a historic Kyle Larin-esque rookie season. People like to nitpick this guy, and we still are doing it. I hear it on broadcasts. I hear it from fans every time the Sounders play. Oh, well, no left foot. Oh, well, if he just finished every time. But look, the kid's got 8 goals. He's leading the team in goals. He's still pushing along. He'll be a big part.
Yeah, but he's got no left foot.
I know.
He would already be
I know. He and I have the same left foot. I get it. I know. But that stuff will come around. He's still doing pretty well with the right. Meanwhile, Doyle, RSL, they've got some structural issues here. This is a team that's above the red line. They're in fourth right now in 37 points, but it's a team that does have problems.
They do, and it, I think it's more defensive than offensive because they have, look, they don't have a golden boot contender. Even at his best, Yaromov Sissian's not going to be more than a 12 or 14 goal a year guy. But that front line and then a little bit out of midfield, that's enough for them to compete offensively. The problem is that they're always disjointed, and you saw it against the Sounders. Seattle were able to avoid any sort of pressure because the pressure was either one or two guys. It wasn't the whole team pushing up, and I thought John Strong and Brad Friedel did a really good job of calling this out during the FS1 broadcast of that game. Look, if you're going to be a high-pressure team, you have to be a high-pressure team. If you're going to go and just send it one line and then the other and then the other, you're going to allow for space in the midfield to build up, and that's how you get pulled apart and give up a ton of good chances. And even Nick Raimondo, the greatest goalkeeper in MLS history, can't save you week after week after week.
Yeah, nice plug there. Go vote for it. Once again, Nick Raimondo. If he doesn't make it to the final, I'm going to look around at people, MLS fans, anybody that come to our website, and I'm just going to give you the side eye because it's really going to be an issue. It's going to be a real problem. Dallas, the team at the top of the conference right now, 2 goals against Sporting Kansas City. They had to come back in this one. Dom Dwyer with 2 goals for Sporting KC, a 2-2 draw. RSL had the door wide open to move up the table. They couldn't do it, Ben, but this one, I was sitting around, you know, what, this morning, just kind of looking at Dallas's team. We keep talking about their center forward situation, and somebody tweeted something at me about, oh, hey, look at all the depth they have, and I said, what depth? I said, ooh, Coycraft, Tesho, who, by the way, scored this weekend, Gederson. Mm-hmm. Tesho favorited that tweet, so I expect him to absolutely go off on folks. He said, thanks for the motivation. Sorry, rest of the Western Conference, if he starts banging in the goals, I'm going to take all that credit. You know I'm going to do it. But I was thinking, Kubo Torres to FC Dallas. Why not? That was the fake MLS trade that we should have been calling out at the deadline. I know he's not a perfect fit as the number 9, but that's interesting. Dallas in this game, 2-2. Do we still have doubts about whether they have enough, or was this just kind of a...
This was to me, I had one eye on this game the whole time. They seemed tired to me. They just seemed like Wednesday night took a lot out of them. They played a lot of the same players who played 120 minutes.
And an emotional night, too.
An emotional night. Remember they flew back then. We had Pareja on the show. He said they flew back that night, got like a couple hours of sleep, and were at training the next day. I mean, I think they were tired. You could see it. Carlos Gurriz, I'm not sure exactly what minute it was, whenever he was taken out, he just looked like dead.
Just
like,
dragging.
Just completely dragging. Mm-hmm. You know, he is a ball of energy every game. He's going really hard 90 minutes every game. In this game, it just seemed like they didn't have that oomph.
Still found a way to get it done. Urruti at the end with a little bit of a bike to put it in to tie this game. Alec Kann, not his finest moment on a night that he had a lot of really good ones, a bunch of good saves in this match, but the ball hits the joint between the crossbar and the post, bounces out to Urruti, and he puts it away. I'm going to open this one up to you, Doyle, as well. Kubo Torres, I'm just like throwing that one out just to see what you think. But is the number 9, is that actually going to be what bites them down the stretch? I mean, they had a chance to really set themselves apart, and we've harped on it. But Fabian Castillo, he kind of screwed them with the timing of this thing. They just didn't have time to get it done. But at the same time, you had the whole window. You knew you needed a number 9.
I agree on both counts with you. I think Castillo's timing was terrible, and there's got to be more to that story than we know. The number nine thing is just, look, I still think Dallas is going to win at least one title. I'll be shocked if they don't win the Open Cup. And, they have a very good chance at the Supporter Shield as well. But this front line does not instill the type of confidence that one wants from a team that is so talented everywhere else on the field. And hopefully someone like Tesho takes that and uses it as motivation. But in Tesho, I see a guy who is primarily a poacher. A guy who can make great runs like he did for that goal, but he doesn't do the hold up work. He doesn't do the sort of with the ball type of stuff that to set up the runs from the wingers that Blas Perez was so good at. And I think the lack of that is what brings Dallas back to the pack and leaves the door open for Colorado, LA, maybe TFC, maybe even NYCFC to win the Supporter Shield.
Things still wide open, of course. You mentioned L.A. and Colorado, a 1-1 draw between these two teams. Daniel Steers with the goal for L.A. and Shakel Zhengashi with the goal for Colorado. A really, really nice finish. There's some big questions to be asked of that team, I think, when Jermaine Jones comes back, because I'm not sure that Gashi is a guy who's going to thrive on the wing. He wants to be in the middle. He wants to be around goal. But you got a lot of guys on that team that want to be there. A draw between these two teams, a lot of openings for teams in the Western Conference. San Jose took advantage of theirs on Friday night on the road in Vancouver. The slumping Whitecaps once again losing 2-1. They get a consolation goal at the end. But David Oestad with one of the if you're a Caps fan, you're just shaking your head. He basically pulls the ball into his own goal on this one, and then Simon Dawkins with a screamer, and we haven't seen that enough from Simon Dawkins. For the DP tag, for the reputation, he hasn't done that nearly enough. In Vancouver, they haven't done it nearly enough. A bunch of guys who signed extensions, Doyle, they're underperforming, and there's got to be a lot of questions asked from top to bottom. I love what they do with young players, or at least their dedication to bringing along young players, but the results, the consistency, it's not been there for a while here.
No, I think you mentioned it with the guys who signed extensions this offseason haven't really been living up to it. And this was something that was pointed out to me by Whitecaps fans. I mean, it's specifically Pedro Morales, Kendall Waston, and David Oestad. But then none of the young players who were sort of, I think, front and center over 2014 and 2015 have really developed all that much in 2016. I thought Sam Adekugbe maybe would have won a starting job. I thought maybe Tim Parker would have made a leap. I thought this was the year that Matias Laba would have established himself as unquestionably the best D-mid in MLS. And none of that has happened. Add Kakuta Mane's unfortunate injury in as well. And that's a pretty bad recipe. I guess the other one, Octavio Rivero. Mm-hmm. I thought after one season of getting his feet wet, he had to come back and had a DP caliber season this year. Obviously, that didn't happen, and now he's gone, and there are still no answers up top for this team.
There are not. They are now 2 points out from the red line here. Portland Timbers, the final spot in the mix. Outside of the mix right now, San Jose on 31 points, Vancouver 30 points, Seattle 27, Houston Dynamo 21. We'll talk about the Dynamo in the second segment because there's a little bit of mix-up. There were two East-West games this weekend. The one we will talk about in this segment is DC's 2-0 win against Portland. Ben, do you give the reins to Acosta? Because I see the goal he scored, but then I see Twitter and people are saying, wait a second, this guy doesn't complete passes. He's not someone within the run of play that makes them noticeably better, but he does look good in isolated instances. He has flair, and that's something DC hasn't had. You look at this team, they lost Fabian Espíndola. Acosta's the guy who's going to create. But will Ben Olsen or should Ben Olsen lean on him?
I think he kind of has been over the past month or so. I mean, he's playing 90 minutes every game now. I think for him, he's not a playmaker in your typical sense. I think you need to play him closer to goal, more like kind of like the way Jovinko plays, maybe a little bit. I mean, it's not Jovinko, but the way he kind of plays closer to goal, put him out left now. I mean, you have Patrick Mullins. You know he's going to stay high. You know he's going to make the necessary runs. He's going to occupy a couple of defenders, and that should leave some space a little closer to goal and not have him drift back into the midfield to get the ball. That's not his game. They need to maybe pinch in their wingers a little bit, get a little more and play more as a forward as opposed to midfielder.
Doyle, I'll just go ahead and take the Patty Mullins spiel out of your mouth here. And a nice game from him. Really good game. Creates for others. Is unselfish. Should have had a couple goals in this game, but Jake Gleason is an absolute monster. What was wrong with Portland, though? No Diego Chará for this match, and they didn't look like they really had it. They weren't up to it.
They weren't. Their body language hasn't been great. They've been shut out in four of their last eight games, and that's an issue because their defense hasn't been at the level it was last year either. And look, if this team doesn't get out on the run, if you don't turn the ball over in bad spots and allow them to break out on you, they don't really have a ton of ideas in how to break you down from possession, because the only guy who really gets into the box consistently is Fernando Adi. If you look at a team like, well, we'll say the Union are always putting two, three guys into the box whenever a chance presents itself, whether it's on the break or from possession. Portland, it's usually 1v4, and then you have Valeri lurking out around the center of the 25 yards out. That hasn't been the type of recipe that this team needs to be a consistent threat on goal. I don't know how they solve it, because every time they do try to add more attacking elements, it just falls apart defensively. So Caleb Porter's definitely going to earn his money down the next 2.5 months of the season.
Liam Ridgewell back for them. That's a good news for Timbers fans. Big game on Sunday. I mean, the massive game. We'll talk all about this on Thursday. 9:30 p.m. Eastern, FS1, Sounders hosting the Portland Timbers. And, oh, by the way, they'll do it all over again the week after that. So a lot of Cascadia Cup action coming up. That's the Western Conference after this weekend. At the top, FC Dallas. Rapids below them, Galaxy, Real Salt Lake, Sporting KC, Portland Timbers, and then the Red Line. Those four teams at the bottom fighting to get above it. When we come back, we'll jump right into the Eastern Conference and try to sort out who might be the top team among them all.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hi, this is Josie Altador from the U.S. national team, and you're listening to MLS Extra Time Radio.
Back now on Extra Time Radio with the guys, not David Goss, been the research bear, Matt the Armchair Analyst, I am Andrew Wiebe. We are back for the Eastern Conference here, and plenty to talk about because it got a little bit wild depending on the game you were watching. Patrick Vieira basically said, we need more games like this after a 3-3 draw in Columbus that was kind of exactly what you'd expect here. A lot of scoring, not a lot of defense, some set-piece ridiculousness. We'll talk about that in just a second. But first, I think the biggest result of the weekend, perhaps outside of that 4-0 win for Philadelphia in New England, Doyle, it's New York's win against Montreal at home. 3-1, BWP gets a brace in this game, and he's now the all-time leading scorer with 65 goals in 113 games across all comps. For the Red Bulls, you can see his teammates loved him. They certainly did in this one. But they might like Sasha Kljestan more. I'm just going to keep beating this drum. He's the best American number 10 in MLS right now. I think he's taken that over from Benny Feilhaber, no doubt. I think he might be, if not the best, maybe the most productive number 10 overall. I mean, he's approaching that point. The guy, he just gets results. He has about 5 or 6 passes a game that put his teammates right on the line to score, and he's such a huge part of their buildup. I mean, it's uncanny. He's not getting enough attention.
I think I agree with you, and I think it's – I mean, one thing that's interesting is each of the last 3 years, it's been Lee Wynn was the best in 2014, and then Benny Feilhaber last year, and now it's Sasha Kljestan. These three guys from, roughly the same age cohort fighting back and forth for the mantle of best American number 10. But to put it in perspective, what Kljestan's doing – he now has 14 assists on the season. He had 14 last year. 28 over a 2-year stretch is the most in MLS, tied with Landon Donovan in 2013 and 14 and tied with Brad Davis in, I want to say, 2011 and 12 or maybe 10 and 11. Anyway, 28 is the most in any two-year stretch since the assist rule was tightened up following the 2001 season. He used to get assists for anything in this league. Now it's a little bit harder to. So what Kleshin's doing is wild. It is uncannily productive. And what makes him special is that obviously he has good skill, and I think his vision is spectacular and is really underrated, but it's his work rate. We usually think about number 10s as like, okay, we can play him, but he's going to take something off the table defensively, so we have to adjust for it in this way and that way. Kleshin takes nothing off the table defensively. In fact, he adds to everything that the team does defensively. And I think he's a two-way number 10. I think he probably is the best, though I think the guy in Seattle will have something to say about that by the end of the month.
We may be working on a little bit of a list here trying to rank these guys. It's pretty difficult. I mentioned, Ben, that BWP got that brace. I asked you to come in here with a list of the all-time leading scorers for every MLS club, thinking that you would be testing Doyle and I to see how we would do. I've avoided looking at the email. I avoided looking at the numbers. So see if you can stump us. Throw some teams out there. Doyle, did you cheat here?
No, I didn't know this was coming.
Okay,
so this will be
good. Perfect. Let's see what we got here.
A lot of these are pretty obvious, so we're going to try and stay away from those.
But give us some, every now and then mix in an obvious one, just so we can, get a little bunny at the rim.
Let's start off with the Chicago Fire here.
Ante.
Weeby?
Ante Razov.
Weeby?
I'm gonna defer to Doyle, because I think that one is not necessarily a... it's not a no-duh one, but it's got
right,
some
right.
elements.
So,
that's where, right?
Yes, that is correct.
Ding, ding, ding.
That is 1,000%. 1,000%, that's a no-duh one.
Okay.
He had 76 goals with the Fire. He's also the leading goal scorer in Chivas USA history with 30 goals. All right. Let's go with a little Colorado Rapids.
Colorado Rapids, huh?
Yeah. This one could be – I think this one's a little harder.
I think it's Connor Casey.
Yeah, I was going to say Con Man is what I would go with.
It is the Con Man.
Yes.
One of my all-time favorites, as Weeby knows.
Yes. I figured once you said Rapids that we were going Con Man there. That's so how many has he got?
50.
Okay. All right.
I think lastly, we're going to go with Columbus. All the other ones are pretty obvious, so we're going to go with Columbus for the last
Stern John.
One.
No, it's not Stern John. It's either McBride or Jeff Cunningham.
Cunningham's a good call. I don't think it's McBride.
Stern John, I'll tell you that much.
He was not there long enough. So is it Cunningham?
It is Cunningham.
Okay, how many goals?
64.
Is he leading scorer for multiple teams?
He is not, actually. Oh. I think the only one who is that is
Ante.
Okay. Yeah. So if we're going through the rest of the teams, if you look at what? Is Toronto D-Row?
Wait, I'm going to try to do it.
No,
it's okay, fine. Okay, go, so go ghost. Okay, we'll do really Dallas.
Okay, Dallas.
Dallas is Christ.
Yes, yeah. D.C.?
DC is Moreno.
Yep.
Houston
is
probably D-Row. I mean,
it's got
Ching.
Ching, yeah,
Ching. Thank you.
Yeah, God.
SKC.
Preki.
Yes. LA.
Landon.
We're gonna go with Miami.
This one's a little harder. Yeah, Miami.
Diego Serna.
All right.
Good call.
Montreal.
In MLS. So
I guess this one. Yeah, well, Devaya.
Yeah.
New England.
Taylor.
Yep.
NYC.
Via.
We know Red Bulls. We know Orlando. Laren.
Yep.
Philly.
Latu.
Sebastian, yeah.
Portland.
Valeri.
No.
Ooh, is it Adi?
Stumped him. We got one. Yeah, it's Adi.
Really?
36 goals. Okay. Got one. Well, Valeri didn't only score like three or four goals last year.
No, you're right.
RSL.
Sabo.
Sabo, yeah.
San Jose.
Wando.
Seattle.
Oba.
Montero.
Oh.
Yes, Doyle.
Yes, good call.
Tampa Bay.
The dog, Roy Lassiter.
Uh-huh. And Toronto.
D-Row.
Giovinco.
Yep. Giovinco.
Yeah, I was going to say, when he didn't react when I said D-Row last time, I knew that Giovinco had overtaken.
And Vancouver to finish it up.
Ooh, who would be Vancouver's? I mean...
Is it Camilo?
It is Camilo.
Camilo, nice.
The legend.
Okay, that's good. That was interesting. I liked that. Hey, another note from this game.
How much different would the last 2 years have been if they had been able to hold on to Camilo? My goodness.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a very, very good point. Look, this game, New York 3, Montreal 1, as I said, Sean Davis, he's got 2 goals and 2 assists in 2 games. The Red Bulls Academy doing good stuff. Alex Mule looks great. Connor Lade, hey, shout out to Connor Lade, by the way. I'm not sure that we ever said on this show, but he is out for the year with a knee injury. Yeah. One of the good guys in this league. A guy that I really like to watch.
A sad, sad day.
It is. It is. And it's a sad, sad day for that team as well because he was doing good stuff. Derek Etienne is now making the bench, so more homegrown love for them. And, of course, Matt Miazga, who we'll see what happens with Chelsea. They're on in the other room right now, but we're not watching right now. Meanwhile, Montreal, tough times. They're still in the playoff field, but it's not been particularly pretty over the last couple months for them. So they've got some issues to figure out. This game was not their shining hour. I was at the game. It didn't particularly look like they knew what they wanted to do, and that red card to Ambrose Ianga was not what they needed. Not what they needed at all. No red card for New England, but Philly still lay it on him. Alejandro Bedoya debuts, a 4-0 win. He had 72 minutes. He played the number 8. We were pretty much right about that. Jim Curtin would not give away what he was doing, but it was pretty clear. So I think he'll play the number 8 the rest of the year. He's not going to be flashy. You're not going to walk away from games Doyle saying, hey, this guy was the best player on the field. But he's going to be super effective, and he's going to make every single player on that team much, much better this year. This is a team that has to be really excited about what the second half can bring.
I think so, and it's because Bedoya is just – he's a smart player. He just figures stuff out, and in this case, he figured out how to get Tranquillo Barnett of the ball in better spots, and you know, once Barnett is on the ball in good spots, it all sort of comes together pretty quickly for the Union. The one issue that they've had is that they haven't been finishing all that well. I don't want to say the one issue. One of the issues that they've had is they haven't been finishing all that well. CJ Sapong is everything you want from a center forward except for a clinical finisher. Chris Pontius has been the guy to pick up a lot of that slack, and he has double-digit goals now.
Say.
A guy, who I think we had been writing off because of just the last 3 years lost to injury.
10 goals, 5 assists. I mean,
I'll eat some crow on this one. I when they made the trade at Pontius's salary number that we think we know, I was a little shocked that they actually gave something up for Pontius, despite when he's basically been injured. He was injured the last 3 years before this season.
Nonstop, basically.
But good for him.
And a guy
who's
been 24
great.
Years old was a best 11 player in this league, and who I think, you know, in the argument with top 3 winger in MLS this season.
I mean, I'm going to watch 30 of the 34 games in 2012 that DC United play. He was incredible.
Yeah.
He's not exactly that kind of player anymore. He's more goal dangerous and less about, you know, taking guys one-on-one. But he's been, you know, easily most improved if you're going to
This is the player that everybody thought he was going to be, you know, right? Yeah. It was just like an effortless 10-goal season, effortless, you know, maybe hit 10-10 and just look like he's having fun doing it. I mean, he's not the, as you said, he's not the dynamo on the wing that he used to. He's just a smart player who gets in the right spots, and we always knew that he could finish. So he's having a great year. We're feeling good about him, and so are Union fans. The Revs, meanwhile, not feeling so good about themselves. They move in Kai Kamara. It's not really paying dividends. The back line, not really working out. They don't go make a move in the transfer window. According to conversations I've had, Doyle, AJ Soares had interest in coming back to MLS. He was not particularly interested in coming back to the Revs. They did not want to trade his rights. A number of teams throughout the league, as you might expect, being interested in him. It didn't happen. He signs in Denmark. But Revs fans, I feel like we repeat this every show, but then they go out and ship 4 goals at home. And you're just looking at that back line saying, how could you afford not to reinforce?
It boggles my mind. I have no idea what the front office was thinking in not bringing in central defensive reinforcements during the window. I mean, whether Soares wanted to be with the Revs or not, you could at least use his rights and trade them for something tangible that you could put towards bringing in the right fit. It has cost this team repeatedly over the last, you know, 6 months. I think, look, AJ Soares is not a national team, you know, superstar type of player, but he was a really good central defender in MLS. He helped that team get to MLS Cup 2 years ago. They have tried, I think, 5, 6 different central defenders at that spot since then. None of them have worked. It's This is, I think, a collective failure on the part of the Revs Brain Trust.
And let it be known, AJ Soares did not want to come back for no money. He wanted a good chunk of chains, probably TAM level money, and I think that might have been an issue for the Revs. It might not have been an issue for some other teams, but as it stands, they're not able to pick him up, and they've got to go the rest of the way. Unless they can find a free agent center back, they got to go the rest of the way with what they've got. They're still fighting, clawing. We'll see how it goes for them. But as it stands right now, they're an eighth in the Eastern Conference, just a point below the red line on 26 points. But that's kind of the theme that we'll get to in just a second on this thing, Ben, which is the East is wide open, and anybody could be top. Anybody could be bottom at the end of the season. Well, not anybody. There's a couple teams that are probably going to be the bottom. One of those teams is maybe Columbus Crew SC, a 3-3 draw for them at home against NYCFC. A big goal late from Ethan Finley, who had a brace in this one. But it was wild. It was the sort of game that you watch and you turn off and you think, what just happened?
It was just another NYC game.
It was. Frank Lampard, I mean, if it's ugly, he'll score it.
The three or four of the people in the office when that goal happened just started laughing.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's 100% a skill to be in the right position always, to be able to score those kind of goals. But, I mean, the fact that half of his goals have either he's had nothing he had knew nothing about, or the ball just happened to have hit off him, or something like that, it's just funny at this point.
Yeah, there may become a thing called, you know, a Frank Lampard goal in this league. Or it's just
click. I mean, look, the game is about being in the right place right time.
And it's tongue in cheek. We're tongue in cheek here. It's got nine goals. All of a sudden, he's got nine goals.
Look, he's remarkable to watch. If you're a young attacker listening to the show, or you're the parent of a young attacker listening to this show, sit down and watch some film of Frank Lampard. Watch what he does when he is away from the ball, because he is one of the best in the world still at finding those spots.
And he did it in this game. 3-3 here. What a pass from Andrea Pirlo to David Villa. Two goals from David Villa in this game. David Villa, we've run out of superlatives to say about him in the box. I mean, the touch to bring down Pirlo's little chip is as deft as it can possibly be. And if we're going back to, hey, if you're an attacking player, go watch this. Look at how calm he is when he brings that ball down. There's no hurry there.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a couple of times where he actually has flubbed that touch this year that I've seen. But, I mean, most of the time he's going to do it exactly like that. And that's exactly how NYC drew it up. I mean, Lampard scores, you know, an in-the-box goal. And Pirlo and Villa connect on a beautiful chip pass and a little touch and, you know, goal. And then they get another one very late through a PK, which I 100% agree with. Harrison Offal's arm was out. Yep. I don't know what Simon Borg is going to say on ETR on instant replay later.
We wish he was going to say something
ETR. But I think it's just remarkable to me how good NYC is at one side of the field and how really, really bad they are at the other side of the field. I mean, to give up that the late goal after scoring is, for a team that's supposed to be, you know, one of the best teams in the East, and they're at the top of the East right now, to me, if I was Patrick Vieira, I'd be very upset.
Yeah, they have allowed 43 goals this year. Only the Revolution and the Eastern Conference have allowed more. That's an issue. They almost got their seventh road win in this game. It wasn't to be. They split the points. Also splitting the points were Chicago and Orlando on Sunday. Kyle Larin, Doyle, he's in the conversation for best nine in MLS. Is that off? I mean, I don't think it is at this point. The guy does the finishing in the box. He does the build-up work now. He does the hold-up play. He's got to have scouts drooling.
No, I'm sure that Orlando City are going to have to bat away some offers, or maybe accept the right one this winter, because he has the whole package. And I've said it a million times on this show before, but if you watch how quickly he's able to get a shot off compared to other big guys, it's night and day. The other thing is his first step. He's learned how to use his body, absorb contact, and then when he takes his first step, he creates the type of instant separation that you don't really expect to see from a big man. He's good. He's really good. I think the one thing you want to see is maybe still a little more killer instinct in and around the box, because this was 2 points dropped for Orlando. Mm-hmm. They should have won 5-1 in this one, and then somehow they managed not to.
A draw for Chicago at this point, just about any result, they'll take it. But Orlando looking back at this and thinking, boy, what could have been? We could have pushed above the red line as it stands. They're tied with DC, but below because they have one fewer victory on the season. We'll end with the last game of the weekend. Houston 1, Toronto 1. And this one was kind of crazy. It was supposed to go down on Saturday night. Did not happen. There was weather and all sorts of...
I was supposed to be on that game.
Sitting in the office.
Just sitting in the office.
Just hanging out. So were the teams. They were a little bit unhappy about it, apparently. But delayed till Sunday night. A weird game in a weird place. Not a huge crowd after that reschedule. We're talking about points dropped. This is two dropped by Toronto for sure, Ben. I mean, they're going to look at this game and think, boy, these are points we should have had, and if we would have got them, we'd have been top of the East.
It's not a
turning point draw, but it's got to be frustrating. And their fans were not happy.
Yeah, I think their fans were a little overblown. I mean, just following Kurt Lawson's always fun after TFC games, just to see
negotiations with Kurt
really?
As a Canadian
okay.
correspondent.
Got
He's
it.
Very interested, but his salary demands got are it. A little bit. Not sure if I can pay him that.
To me, I mean, yeah, it's disappointing. You're up a man the whole second half. You have Jovinko on your team. Josie just scored a great goal, and you can't score. You can't get the win. But if you go into the game, if they would have gone into the game saying, you're going to get a point out of this, I think they would have taken it.
Yeah, especially on the
on the road in MLS, you sat in a locker room for 6 hours the night before. You have to stay an extra day, a whole day, because the game's at 9:15 the next day. You'll take a draw.
Yeah, you will. Now, look, the post got hit a couple times. Josie had a nice game. This is what we expect from him. I think, Doyle, that he's going to start from now on, if I had to guess. And he was good in this game. I thought Joe Willis absolutely robbed him on a diving header in the first half. That's one of the better shot-save combinations I've seen in MLS this year. Chuck Omaidana gets the goal for Houston, by the way. Playing in that striker role was Mauro Manotas. That's an interesting one. Will Bruin came off the bench. We go back to Kubo once again. Who knows what's going to happen with that team in the number 9 position the rest of the way. But this leads me to my question, which is, who's the best team in the Eastern Conference? I look at this table, and you go down from 1 to 4 at this point, I think are all interchangeable as potentially the best team, and that's New York City FC, Toronto, Red Bulls, and the Union. I'm not putting Montreal in that group.
Right.
I'm not. I just think defensively there's too many question marks with them, and I'm not sure how good they've been since that hot start. Who's the best team in the East, Ben?
To me, it's Toronto. I think the other four teams, I'm going to keep Montreal in there, have a lot of issues defensively. They've shown that over the course of the entire season. New York, I mean, they've given up the second most goals. New York City, I should say. Red Bulls have consistently let up late goals. Philadelphia have looked kind of lost defensively at times, especially in that game against Montreal a few weeks ago. And Montreal, we talked about them and the way they played against the Red Bulls. Toronto's the strongest defensively. They have the best player in the league. They have a striker a U.S. national team striker who's just getting back to top form. And they have a dynamo in the midfield, Michael Bradley, who can dominate games. To me, last year the main problem was that they shipped a ton of goals because they couldn't handle anybody defensively. Once Clint Irwin comes back, I mean, not that I think Alex Bono has played well. Once Clint Irwin comes back, I don't think there's any team in the East that can say they're even close defensively to them.
Is that are you going to be on board with that, Doyle? Are you on the TFC train here?
Yeah, I think I am.
A little reluctantly, it sounds like.
I do think the Red Bulls would have an argument if they didn't have so many injuries. You know, Laid is head and shoulders significantly better than either Salzizo or Chris Duvall, so they'll really miss him at right back. And Parnell being out, Dax being out for, you know, the next 4 weeks probably, it's tough. So I do think that right now it's Toronto FC, and I think that, look, they have the easiest schedule left of any of the teams in the East, so they have a chance to not only maintain their points per game lead, but to put a little distance between themselves and the pack. Key with them is can they keep their big guns healthy? And it's not just the DPs; it's Drew Moore.
Mm-hmm.
Drew Moore, other than Jovinko, Drew Moore might be the most irreplaceable player on that roster, and he had a poor game on Sunday night. When he is not at his best, that defense is far from its best as well.
I'm going to go out on a limb, and I guess it's not a limb. I'm going to say the Red Bulls. I just think that once they figure things out, their system has shown that at least in the regular season, it's probably the best in the East. I still think Toronto may be a little bit too reliant on Jovinko and as well as Josie Altidore have to keep going. So, but if those guys are hitting, I'll give it to you. Yeah. If those guys are hitting, it's Toronto FC.
So basically what we're saying is come at us, NYCFC fans, Philadelphia fans, and Montreal fans.
Hey, I like Philadelphia. I said that as well. And
I mean,
New York's fun to watch.
I mean, I like watching all the – to me, what's great about all – like looking at these five teams, they all play attacking soccer. They all play very – visually pleasing soccer, and I think that's some great progress. Yep. For our league.
Yeah, I think in terms of aesthetics, NYCFC is number one in the league.
Yeah,
100%. And Philly might be number two.
Fun stuff. We'll see what happens out east. Who's the best team? Who's going to make the playoffs? Let us know what you think at Extra Time Radio, extratime@mlssoccer.com. When we come back, right into the mailbag.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hey, this is Alejandro Bedoya from the U.S. National Team, and you're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Basically the David Goss call right there. We got the Bin the Research Bear call, and Ja Rule is basically what we play when Dave comes on, and he's hitting us up from the Hamptons, riding around, doing his thing, going to the beach. We got to give him some time off at some point. Dave, what's up, man? How's it going?
It's going okay. What would it be vacation if I wasn't on Extra Time Radio?
That's right. We can't let you get too far away. I told everybody in the first segment I was going to call your people. We might do a little around the horn to get you on the show, and now you're here. And I want to talk video replay here because it went down, and you were the guy calling the game in USL, the Red Bulls 2 with a 5-1 win against Orlando City B. But this was the first game for video assistant referee technology. Tell me what went down. What were they looking at? What plays were reviewed? Give us the once over.
Yeah, so they talked to us before it started, and the point of it is that there are four potential types of plays that can be reviewed if they see what they call a clear error. So this isn't for the 51-49 tackle. This is for when, you know, the Alex Morgan play against Germany in the Women's World Cup, where she was clearly fouled outside the box and it was called a PK. It's for moments like that. So it's any goal, whether it was allowed or not allowed, and there's a clear error in that. And then when you can review what they call the passage of play. So it's not just whether the ball crossed the line. It's was there a foul as the ball was turned over and then shot on goal? Was there an offside, the pass right before the goal was scored? Any red card, direct, straight red card given? Any mistaken identity? So any issues like that and any penalty kick given or the referee, video assistant referee, believes could potentially be given and that there was a clear error in missing it. So they believe there are 13 to 14 plays that should be seriously checked every game and should be used 2 to 3 times a game. And it was used twice on Friday night. The first one in the first half was a foul from behind as he charged in on goal. It was a free kick given on top of the box. And then the referee stepped away. He took a moment. He listened to his VAR. His VAR said, I think you should go over and review it. I think there's a clear potential for a red card. He walked over right behind that goal, took two looks at it, walked right back, gave a straight red card. And the game moved on, and, you know, broadcast over 100 soccer games. That would have been a talking point all game, but with the video replay, it was handled seamlessly, didn't waste any time, and then we just moved on.
So that one worked seamlessly. There was no problems. But I did hear there was an instance, not that it didn't work correctly, but just that there was a little bit of confusion. And I think this is what, you know, the Bruce Arenas of the world and a lot of people who are a little bit skeptical look at and say, well, you know, there's a time constraint here. Can we get things perfect? And that's really what you want if you're going to video review. What was kind of the, am I right? Was there kind of an iffy one, one that there was a little doubt about?
The second play was, you know, a guy took a long touch. He reached out after, and there was a stud up tackle, but the referee didn't make any call in the run of play. So then when he was talked to by the VAR, he had to pause, think back to what the play was. And then I think there was a miscommunication and that the VAR was saying, I think you should go review the play. And it sounded like the referee was hearing, I'm currently reviewing it. And so wasn't understanding that it was his time for him to go over and choose, if he wanted to review the play. Because the head referee doesn't have to accept that. He stops play. He hears the VAR tell him, I think you should go review the play. He then can decide, no, I saw enough in live time, or yes, I want to go take another look at it. And this isn't to take away, like I said, there's always going to be a little bit of controversy. It's not going to be perfect. It's also still the head referee's decision, so it's
right.
still his style of game, his call. But it seems like there are some moments that ruin games, whether it's a red card that shouldn't have been given or a PK that shouldn't have been given, and that changes the way the game is played. And you're not going to take out human objectivity, but it should make things a little bit cleaner. And most of those instances are all things where the ball already stopped. Checking whether or not the ball goes over the line on a goal, you're already stopped and the players are celebrating in the corner. Why not take a peek at a monitor right behind that goal at that time to make sure you got it right?
Yep, trying to figure all this out, the logistics, how it goes down, what decisions they're going to look at. And there's just communication on the field. It's all kind of a work in progress. You know what? We got a little bit of time here. I'm going to give you 20 seconds. Who's the best team in the Eastern Conference? You missed out on this discussion. I need your Twitter answer right now. Who's the best team?
Best team or who's going to be in MLS Cup?
Best team. Or both. Remember, Doyle picked Vancouver Whitecaps to MLS Cup, so you got to go to a limb here.
I'm going to say TFC is going to be in the MLS Cup.
Boom.
From the Eastern Conference. But currently the best team, I guess, NYC.
That's about where we stood. There were a lot of different opinions. Big thanks to Dave for joining us on his vacation. We'll let you go now, man. Big thanks to Ben and Matt as well. That's it for us. Let us know what you think, as always, and we'll catch you on Thursday.